Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order. We will dispense with the Pledge of Allegiance until the regular meeting. Carol, can you call roll, please?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. Okay, public comment. I'm going to dispense with public comment. There is no public available in attendance this evening. And I will now have legal take us into closed session.
So we've got closed session in accordance with the item D listed on the agenda.
Thank you. D, closed session.
Mr. Sheriff, we're trying to discuss that.
Okay.
What's going on?
At this point, were we on?
Yeah.
I'll take us back into open session and counsel?
No reportable action coming out of closed session.
Thank you. At this point, we'll adjourn to the regular meeting. Let's take a 5 minute. Let's take a 2 minute or 3 minute one to adjourn the regular meeting. Thank you.
Oh, that's funny.
Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting of the Community Service District to order. Can we have the Kevin? We'll join Kevin in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag and the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Carol, can you call roll?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. It is now time for public comment. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time the item is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. Are there any public comments? This time I'll close public comments. Presentations. Rick, do we have any presentations?
Not this evening.
Thank you very much. Area agency, I see the sheriff is with us tonight. Come on down.
Seen an increase in petty thefts, either vehicle related or just off property. But we've also been seeing a trend that times are kind of more in the daytime. So we're just asking that people call in any kind of suspicious activity, especially relating to any kind of door-to-door salesmen or stuff like that, because often we see relationship to thefts and those type of people being out here. Good news, we've seen a decrease in the catalytic converter thefts. We did put out a crime report specifically trying to target owners of a specific vehicle that's been targeted, the newer Dodge diesels. So we got a positive there. We're down to one, but we'd like to see that down to zero. Made a few warrant arrests out here. And looks like that's everything you wanted me to address. Does anyone have any questions regarding what's been going on?
I think it was pretty quiet.
Yeah, kids are back in school, so that's a really good thing for us.
There's been a lot of new deputies this last few years. What's going on? Why are people changing over so much out here?
We've seen a lot of retirement with our older staff due to politics, you know, retirement's changing with us. So just our department's getting pretty young. That's probably the most of it.
Are all DUIs a misdemeanor?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just looking, because it's a marine DUI misdemeanor. I wondered if that was for any excessive reason or anything, or if it was just...
I think it's just how it's listed.
Okay. And then the vandalism seems to be... I mean, we have 5 vandalisms in 3 weeks. What? Give me an example of what we're talking about. Do you know? Just give me an example of what that might be.
It could be anything that could cost money to repair. It could be, you know, a mailbox that's knocked down.
Okay.
It could be a car, egg.
Okay.
Any kind of devaluation of any property you have, so that's fine.
Gotcha.
Any other questions, Mary Ann?
Yes, we had the vandalism right here at the community center. Any update on that?
Not that I've been aware of. Generally, from our level on the field, is we'll take the report and it gets forwarded on to our detectives to our misdemeanor complaints. So I'll contact them, see if they've got any leads or follow-ups, but I'm not aware of anything.
Thank you.
I've been in touch with Lieutenant Johnson on that, and I'm making sure that he keeps that as a priority for us.
Cool.
We're definitely, with the pool opening up, we're definitely trying to be on foot more in the area. So just because we're going to see more traffic coming through because of that.
Any questions for the public? No other questions. Thank you very much
Thank
for coming.
You.
Appreciate it. Okay, let's see. We do not have the Highway Patrol. We don't have the Fire District. We do not have East Contra Costa, and we don't have Supervisor Pipo's office. We'll move on to committee liaison reports.
The East Bay, the ECCFPD was delayed their meeting until this coming up Monday because of the holiday, okay. So that might be why they're not here.
Committee transplant is not here. County planning, code enforcement. Anything on code enforcement?
I was at the code enforcement meeting last week. As you know, and I sent out to you in my correspondence to you on Friday afternoon, we've had a number of an increase in the number of illegal signs, and I've been pressuring the county code enforcement as well as District 3 office as well to make sure that they are out enforcing their rules and regulations. Unfortunately, they go up on Friday afternoons and they come down on Sunday evenings. And I talked to Director Graves the other day, and he said, "You were right. They went up on Friday and came down Monday night after the holiday." And so they are making a concerted effort. And so I'm hoping that with increased pressure, that those signs will continue to hopefully stay at bay. And I did talk to the code enforcement officer for here in Discovery Bay, and he's being reassigned. And he's not sure if they have anybody to replace him. So that will be next on my list of items to discuss with the county as relates to a replacement for him. But what he's been doing is I've been sending him photographs with phone numbers, and he takes those and makes an effort to contact. And he calls them and he talks to them, and they sometimes abide by it and sometimes they don't.
Can we comment on this at this time? Yeah. I know it's not an action, but I don't think I should make comment. I will say that I've had conversation with three or four people over at the county about this issue, I had forgot about that, Rick, and based on that and from comments from Public Works and then having some discussions with the Board of Supervisors, we're thinking about trying to develop an MOU, and I know this is something you brought up before too, an MOU with the county where they would give, based on the fact that we maintain the areas anyway, we don't own them, we just maintain them. But so therefore we don't technically have the authority to enforce any rules. We're talking about maybe getting the Board of Supervisors to pass a resolution that gives us the authority to maintain not only the landscaping, but the appearance of the areas that we've been given ward of by giving us authority to do something about the signs. This would be twofold. One is we're losing some code enforcement presence out here anyway, and Public Works has hundreds of miles of road that they have to cover, and we're an outpost, and the Public Works Department said we'd love to have you have that authority, but it has to be something that goes to the Board of Supervisors. So I'm working with the Board of Supervisors hoping that we can bring an MOU back to the board, that the board, that we can work together with them, and then we would have the authority, because the problem is right now we're not supposed to go take those signs down because we don't have the authority to do it. If they give us that authority, then we can police it as we go.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So we're thinking about, Rick and I are going to go to the next code enforcement meeting together, and we're thinking about trying to get the Board of Supervisors to pass a resolution giving us the authority to police that ourselves.
The other thing is some of those signs do get put in our property. A lot of them don't. A lot of them get in the island. At least the ones that get in our, to me, I believe we should warn them one time and toss the sign from that point on.
If we come by a Virgil's crew or a Farron's crew who have been instructed to take them down, sometimes, there may be times on you'll drive to town on a Thursday afternoon and the sign may be up, and their crews are working somewhere else in town, so they're not seeing it. But when they come across it, they are directed to take them down.
No, but you were telling me that you give them back to them. To me, I give them back the first, I call them on the first one. Those signs cost them money. From that point on, it was on our property.
Well, we put them in the sign jail.
Public Works charges you $25 to go get your sign back in Martinez. Because they called me about my signs.
Yeah, but they don't come get it.
That's not a problem.
Are we in the sign business?
We could be.
Are we?
We're in the sign.
I understand that the landscapers can't do their job when there's a sign in the grass, but I thought we've already been putting them in the sign jail for the last 10 years. Why don't we just keep it going and not worry about it? What's the formality? Why do we have to make it so formal? Is it against the law to pull a sign out of the way of the landscaper for the landscaper to cut his lawn?
That's pretty tough, yeah.
Wow.
How are, like, realty signs? Is there any...
They're not supposed to be up either.
So... No.
Technically, the only signs that are allowed up are political signs, and only during the period of the you know what the laws are.
Correct.
State law allows you to put a sign in your yard to sell your house, but in a public area, I don't think that's a law.
Yeah, well, you can put it in your yard.
Yeah.
Which you can't
put it in.
I can advertise that.
And the same thing with the, I'm assuming what the concern is the garage sale moving signs that show up, and then.
When you got Rob Brooker painting, you got that.
Really,
we take those down on Monday mornings.
Really, the concern are the ones that are trying to profit.
That's where I was going.
The pet sitting gal, the guy that's doing kitchen remodels.
Right.
Because first of all, they're probably operating without a permit to be operating in Discovery Bay.
No, and I don't disagree at all. I agree.
Right, those are the ones we're really talking about.
That was my point. Is the residents friendly side of it being.
A garage sale.
It's
okay.
A garage sale.
We don't worry about the weekend.
And
or whatever.
This is going to sound self-serving, but also with regards to
fundraisers,
events that benefit the community, and right. that would be the wine art festival or golf tournament or things like that.
The concept of going to the county would be to isolate that out and specifically say that these are the types of signage that we want to.
The idea of going to the county would. Would be to actually give us the authority to be able to police our own area. Right now, we really can't go out and pull a sign.
Right, but then would we be accused of selective enforcement?
I think we would need to establish a policy after
correct.
Being given that authority. We would have to, that we all agree to, and that would be a size of signs, like the St. Anne sign. I mean, they're trying to get basketball signs, but that sign is obtrusive.
Yes,
it's
it
huge.
Is.
Well,
put some. All right, so let's move on because this is actually not on the agenda. So let's move on. We had fun with it. Okay, county planning. Did a fine job. You wrote that. Code enforcement. We just talked about special districts report. That's quarterly, so that's not going to be. Okay, consent calendar. Any questions on the consent calendar? If not, can I get a motion?
Move to approve.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, new business. Item 1, G1, terminate independent audit services contract with Croce & Company for the period fiscal year 2012-13 through fiscal year 2014-15, excuse me, and enter into contract for independent audit services with Croce, Sanguinetti, and Vander Veen for the audit periods fiscal year 2012-13, fiscal year 2014-15. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. President. That's helpful. What has taken place is Croce & Company, the audit team that we utilize, that's assigned to our audits, that being Mark Croce and Pauline Sanguinetti, have splintered off and formed their own firm. And so back in 2012, the board approved, in January 2012, entered into a five-year agreement, if you will, with Croce & Company that included those team members as part of the contract. If they're not part of it, then we can get out of it. And the contract also provides for a 7-day written notice to terminate that contract. So Mark Croce and Pauline and I don't know Mr. or Ms. Vanderveen have formed their own firm. The board did enter into an agreement with them last year. Essentially to engage Mark and Pauline to conduct our audits along with their staff. And so what I'm recommending this evening is that we go ahead and terminate exercise the termination clause section 14.1 of the agreement we have with Croce & Company right now and enter into a new agreement with Croce, Sanguinetti, and Vanderveen for the remaining 3 years of that 5-year contract period.
So my question would be, if it was Croce and Company and Croce's leaving, what is it now?
I asked that earlier.
It's a very good question. Mark Croce is not the principal. He's a partner in the firm. I believe his uncle is the principal of the firm. And so he has separated off. He and Pauline have separated off and formed their own firm. And it has been an amicable separation. And Croce and Company has allowed and agreed to have Mark and Pauline, they were able to take their clients with them, if you will, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Same players.
Couldn't he pick like Smith and Jones? Why Sanguinetti and Vanderbeek? Anyway.
Sounds good.
But if we look forward, then at the end of this 3-year proposal, then we'll go out for an RFP to reevaluate audit companies.
Correct.
All right.
Okay. Just as a point of, we've worked together with, I've worked for them now for the last almost 4 years, and they have a great grasp on what we are. They were very helpful when we brought in new personnel to into the our accounting department in setting up proper books, making sure that everything was done in ways that would be copacetic with an audit, and I think they've been very valuable to the district.
Yeah, they've been excellent. Chris, anything?
No, I agree.
Marianne? Yeah. Julie, your book. Public comment? If not, and then let's look for a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you. There's no further discussion. I'll take a vote, please. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Move on to item G2, adoption of resolution 2013-18, establishing fees and charges for water, wastewater, and related services. Staff.
This is more of a cleanup resolution. Back in May of 2011, the board adopted resolution 2011-11 that established administrative fees and charges, things like if you bounce a check, those sorts of things. If you have your service turned off, there's now a turn on fee. You go turn the services back on. So that was adopted back in 2011, and that's also attached to the report. It's back there. In 2012, the board adopted resolution 2013-28, also attached, and that is essentially the resolution that adopted the fee structure that's included in the Bartles and Wells, the Bartle Wells report. This establishes those fees for plan permit review fees, sewer connection fees, that sort of thing, inspection, water, sewer connection fees. These fees have been approved by previous boards in different locations in different places, and so I just wanted to get them all wrapped into one place so you can track the history of them, if you will. We're not recommending any changes to the prior two resolutions, 2011-11 or 2013-28. So if you have any questions, we're here to answer them. Essentially, it's plan review fees. There's some plans up there that you can see, and Virgil comes in and reviews those plans, or Farron comes in and reviews the plans. And if they're very simple, they can be dispensed with rather quickly for a nominal fee. But if there's a much larger package, for example, Kuiper Homes is coming in and bringing a whole bunch of submittals, then he needs more time to go through them, or Farron needs more time to go through them if it applies to her work. So we're recommending approval of resolution 2013-18.
If I researched the staff report properly, the proposed fees for these services are still identical to what they were prior to this resolution? Or is there an increase in these particular fees?
For example, on the first one, the plan review fees, time and materials, we never used to charge for the plan review fees. And sometimes, like I said, they were relatively quickly dispensed with, and sometimes they're not. And so it's appropriate for those that are that take a significant amount of time that they be charged time and materials. That would be the burden rate plus overhead. We have that for each person. And then the permit fees, the inspection fees and the permit fees, I believe, have not changed for quite some time. So we're not recommending changes. The biggest change is just charging for the plan review fee, time and materials.
Yeah,
if somebody comes in and they're just doing a deck alteration and he looks at it as real quick and there's nothing to do, it's a courtesy. But if someone's coming in and they've got a full residential development project they're coming in with, it's going to take some time to go through.
Yeah, I have no problem.
Are these published on the website, these fees?
The fees have been, yes, they are published on the website, and these ones will also be included on the website. And they'll also be in the back of the room. If you go a little bit further back, there's four or five pages that are for each service. For example, there's water service fees and charges, and then there's residential capacity fees and charges, and then there's commercial capacity fees and irrigation. So it covers the whole gamut. So when you see what they are, depending on what permit is you're trying to apply for.
If a customer comes in and has a larger set of plans that are going to be a time and material once we review those, is the applicant given any kind of a ballpark? Do they know approximately what the fees might run at that time so there's no surprise kind of at the other end?
You mean prior to dropping off the plans?
Or dropping them off and say, I got this bundle of stuff. And
We could probably work out on the larger ones, we could work out an estimate. So that's an excellent question.
As a courtesy, that they don't come in and say, in the back of their mind, they thought the fee might be $600 and it's $1,600. You know.
We do have one sitting here at a brand new home, and our capacity fee raised. They were believing it was the old fee, so now it's sitting here being held hostage until they come up with
the additional fee.
That's life.
Well, that's just
that's life.
Yeah, yeah. Copy 12 in it now.
Should come in October.
If we have an idea, like I believe Hoffman Company is in the process of bringing in a development plan, which would be a few streets where you're going to put in sewer, water mains, and the other stuff. And that will be T&M, but they never ask. They know they're going to get billed for whatever time it takes to do that.
Yeah.
And they're the only ones, really, in my years here, with the exception of Ravenwood, that have done that.
Pentagus is coming down the pipeline at some point. There's finishing off Discovery Midwest.
Right.
Those are all coming down the pipe. So we wanted to make sure that we have the structure in place. It's all in one location. Everything is there, and it's easily discernible.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Was there any public comment? Okay.
There's no other discussion. We'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Item 3. Approval of wastewater treatment plant number 2 solar dryer C&D electrical installation master plan project number 1314. Staff.
I'm going to have Greg Harris come up and give this report, but briefly I'm going to just note that we were very happy with the bid results.
Hello, Gregory Harris, Turwich Engineering. And as the report says, we received our bids on the last process of the solar dryers for plant number 2. And the engineer's estimate on that was $550,000. And the good news is bids came in at a little over $200,000, about $210,000 or so. The firm we've used before, they've done work for us before, and they've done a good job for us. And we're recommending the approval of the last phase of the project.
Questions?
If you look at the bidder's amount, the lowest bid was $218,259, and then the next one was $221. So they were very close, very competitive. And then they went significantly up from there.
What's interesting is that second one is a contractor who subbed out to electrical, because most of it is electrical, only missed it by $2,000 or $3,000.
Greg, can you explain the difference from the original, what your value engineering was, just real briefly for me, please?
As you recall, we reported last time that we were running over budget on master plan items many months back. So we've been working hard to reduce the cost of all future projects to make sure we come back in line. And we actually have an update for you at the end of the meeting, or somewhere along in this meeting, we have an update on total master plan project. So we, during design of this, incorporated several features to reduce the overall construction cost but still provide good value for the district. Kind of like how we designed the inflow pump station, we came back and cut some money out of that, did some of the design changes. So we went to cable tray, and we eliminated some conduit. We actually eliminated all the conduit on the project. Went with cable tray and deck correct mount cable, and verified that the installations had gone to this process. And in doing so, we were able to save obviously a significant amount of money on the project.
So cable tray, this is an overhead rack.
Yes.
Wire comes into the building.
Yeah, so the wire comes in, and there's a lot of wire that goes in these dryers. So the dryers are 204 feet long. So we have a 24-inch wide cable tray, galvanized cable tray, that suspends all the way down the center of the dryer, and then just lay the wires inside of it. So instead of having to pull an individual conduit for every single wire, they're just able to stack them in, and then it has a lid that goes on top of it.
Value engineering. Well done.
Any other questions? Questions of the public? Not? Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right. No further discussion. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Item 4, adoption of resolution 2013-19, counter discovery of a drafted employee personnel manual.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Back on July the 3rd, I brought to the board a draft of this document, and I noted at the time that I'd be coming back with a, once you had time to read it and to take a look at it and address some of your questions you had at that meeting. And so we're bringing it back for you this evening for adoption.
I thought we were going to get a hard copy of this.
This just came to us today, I believe. Well, go ahead.
This report was completely came to you on Friday with the agenda packet. What came to you was an additional piece of material. The facts and figures had to do with what I sent you today was a comparison from other public agencies. It's in there. It's in the report. But there was a question that came up regarding vacation, and we added the vacation comparison.
Oh.
So that's what I have here for you this evening. In terms of the document itself, you had it on July 3rd, and again, it was distributed on Friday as part of the agenda packet.
Where's a hard copy of this? Do we have a hard copy of this? I've got one. I thought that's what we were getting tonight.
Of the comparison.
Yeah.
Oh.
We don't have that. There we go.
Do you want me to continue? Would you like this to come back at a later date?
To me, I would really like a lot of discussion about this, to tell you the truth. I think this is extremely generous.
Well, okay. Mr. President, if I can go through the report,
yeah, go ahead.
And then we can go, I think that would probably be appropriate, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I brought the draft of the document to the board back in early July. In August of 2003, the employee manual was drafted. It was modified in August of 2004. There has not been one change recommended in this document that is before you this evening that has not been in place since 2003 and 2004 relative to employee benefits subject to vacation, holidays, sick leave, with one exception, and it's outlined in the report. The majority of the changes that are included in this report are legal requirements that we have to comply with relative to the Family Medical Leave Act, military leave, updates to the drug and alcohol policy, updates to some of the work rules, but not one change has been made to this document since it was originally adopted by this board in 2004. They adopted back then what we have in place today. In 2003, in 2004, they made one change. They adjusted the vacation schedule And it's included in the report for you this evening. It's an attachment to the report. In fact, the 2003 document is in there, as is the 2004 document. At the request of the board, the last meeting you asked for a survey of surrounding agencies and what it is that we have and what they offer versus what we offer, and that's before you, and I just handed it out for you this evening. The document is, but for the legal changes, it never would have come before the board. If it wasn't necessary to update from 2003 to today, the Family Medical Leave Acts and those sorts of things, and Rob,
Dr. Attorneys.
Rod can probably, yeah.
We screw everything up.
attest to some of those changes, those required changes. So if the board has any questions or would like to continue it, or it's your pleasure.
What's the purpose of the manual?
The purpose of the manual describes what the employee's work rules are, what they're required to do, what our obligations are to the employee as an employer, what their basic benefits are in terms of what the established benefits are relative to vacation pace, vacation accrual, sick leave accrual, holiday schedule, that sort of thing.
Is it a contract with the employee?
Each employee is required to sign it.
It is not a contract, though, with the employees. Your employees are still remaining at will, but the state requires and what the state suggests, and it's not mandatory that you do this, but what most law firms will tell public agencies and tell even private employers is that you've got a laundry list of guidelines that you're following from the state. When you hire an employee, we recommend all public agencies as well as private entities that you put that in writing. And you are providing it to the employees as an acknowledgement that they receive the rules and the requirements. So that way, when somebody shows up and they've used a prescription drug that otherwise affects their ability to perform their services, you can show them the employee policy that you've otherwise had them sign and acknowledge and identify what their where the violation occurred. In addition, everybody has their own structure associated with when pay is made. Not everybody gets paid every 2 weeks. Not everybody gets paid on a Thursday. Not everybody gets paid on the first and the 15th. And so you can structure those kinds of things as long as you're within the state guidelines in terms of what those things are. There are some mandatory requirements that most people don't go read. This information is contained in 15 different locations. No one employee is going to go look up all the different employee rules with respect to when they can leave for bereavement, when they can leave for having somebody in the military. All of those things are contained in one solid document, so they're able to identify them. You have some open discretion with some of the areas, and one of the areas that you're obviously contemplating is the vacation and sick leave and holidays. I happened to be present at the last meeting, and you had requested this information, and so I know Melissa and Rick have worked hard to try to compile this information for you so you can get a comparison of what's going on with other jurisdictions.
So this chart was put together by your staff?
No, it was put together by Sue.
Okay.
I don't have any comments.
I don't have any issues with it.
Go ahead. I've got comments. There's a thing called paid time off, and I don't know if the board's ever looked at that, but that may be an advantage to encourage people to be at work and have a lump sum of time that they can use that more at their leisure, both coordinate with the management on their scheduling. And I don't know if the board's ever talked about that, and if there's an advantage or disadvantage, we want to look into that. But I've heard that's an employee incentive that may have people stay at work more often than running their time out.
Don't know anything about it.
The term is not necessarily pay time off, it's personal time off. In today's laws and with privacy and HIPAA and everything else, when I see an employee who puts down that they're going to the doctor and they get somewhat specific on their form with what they're going to the doctor for, I tell them to change it and just put down, you have a doctor's appointment. You're ill. Because of privacy laws and regulations, we have to be very careful with that. And that's addressed in here. But what Director Steele is referring to is personal time off, and so that the employer, they just put down, I'm taking personal time, 2 hours, authorized by their manager, that sort of thing. However, you know, going through the normal process, or a day off, or a week off to go to Hawaii, whatever the case is. And generally what takes place is there's a combination of vacation leave and sick leave are added together, so that the employee has the ability to, and if they manage their time well, if they manage their sick leave well and they're not ill, they're rewarded to the extent that they can use it for other things, recreational purposes, if you will, vacation, that sort of thing.
But very typically with that option, the amount of vacation, or the amount of personal time off, is less than the combined vacation and sick time together.
That is correct. I did not pursue a PTO program as a part of this. I've been a part of one before, and they are, I think that they discourage abuse of sick leave, and that's a positive. And you want your employees to get away from the office. You want them to go on vacation. They come back better employees at the end of the day. But the one thing that PTO does do is it sometimes encourages people that are sick to come to work. So there are two sides of that, but I think that from a predominant standpoint, if people are more not inclined to use a sick day, if you will, just because they get up in the morning and they don't feel like going to work, which happens.
I thought maybe it would save some money.
No.
No. Okay.
It costs you money.
Can you use sick pay to go to the doctor?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
I don't get sick pay, so I wouldn't
use
it.
You get
sick pay through the state.
Huh?
You get sick pay through the state. I was on the state website today checking your benefits.
I use PTO.
Oh, you get PTO.
So I don't get sick pay.
That's right. Through the state, you can choose.
I get about 3 days less a year than the people that have sick and thing. But the advantage that it gives me for an incentive is that all of mine is accrual, whereas sick pay you can't accrue. So I choose less days, because I don't take any vacation days anyway. And then all mine accrues.
Bill? Well, I'm in reviewing the other districts, they'll just take three categories at a time under the holidays. I think we're in line with what the other districts are offering on holiday pay to our employees and days off. Private sector, I didn't take a lot of those holidays, but be that as it may, this is a different campus that we're working in. On sick leave and reviewing what we're offering and the other districts are offering, there's two districts that are a little less than us. We're kind of in the middle. There's three or four districts that are a little bit more hours, so I really don't have a problem with those. And I'm trying to go through now that we've got vacation in front of us and get it all into one format, because we've got hours here and we've got days here, et cetera, so I'm looking at days. The only thing that I might comment on, and I don't know if we can do that this evening or take it up at another time, is possibly change when we get the days for vacation. I'm not suggesting you reduce the days, but you know, as an example, we're offering 0 to 1 year, 5 days off vacation. Another district is going 0 to 2 years, 5 days off. So I would like to spend a little time just on the vacation portion only, and maybe come back with some recommendations. And the only reason for that is not in any way to say that, well, we're trying to rein in our employees, or you know, we don't respect them or honor them at all. But I'm looking at it more from an unfunded mandate way down the road at some particular time. And I know there's other cities that have got pension programs that are out of control, like a bankruptcy. We're nowhere near any of that. But this is just one of those small components that I think if we looked at it at this particular time and maybe made a couple suggestions, it helps the district from a financial standpoint a little bit. We're going to pay those days as the employees stay with us longer, which is fine. We have a relatively young staff right now, so there's no major changes when you're talking at 10 years or 15 years or something, because most everybody's been here currently, you know, 3-4 years or less. So I maybe just a little bit of time for myself, I don't know what the rest of the board is, to just maybe come back with a suggestion on vacation mix at all.
If I can clarify one thing. I'm not sure Director Beeson, Director Beeson had a conversation on this earlier this afternoon. In one of the, on page 6 of the manual under section 3.2C, we only allow accrual to a maximum of 2 times your annual accrual rate. So the most unfunded liability the district would ever be out for any one employee would be 40 days of service. That would be the maximum you would be out, would be basically 2 months salary for that person. And right now I only have one employee who is currently working that falls into that category. And I know that that employee does not use his vacation every year. In fact, he it's a use it or lose it program, and he loses it every single year. And he's for him, you know, it's you know, I encourage him to take more vacation sometimes. But I do not have a problem with employees and leaves. They're very respective. They're very responsible. It's a very responsible staff. You should be pleased with that. And so I just want to make sure that you understand that there is only a 2 times annual max. So there's no long range. A lot of cities, a lot of agencies, you can go up, you know, you can accrue forever and ever and ever. We don't do that.
Where I was, where I'll go in and I'll finish is the, at 11 years, you get 20 days of vacation plus all the other things. So that's, I was thinking about bumping that out a little bit, but that's, I would like to hear the rest of the board's comments.
Area?
Well, if I understand correctly, this that you're showing us now is what they currently have. None of this has changed?
That's correct.
What you're looking at, the changes is of the areas that were required. So
the
really
only
the
only request that I'm...
We haven't yet been.
Well, we haven't
disclosed.
Addressed that yet.
No.
We haven't addressed that.
Which
one,
I'm a little.
We're going to get to that.
Okay, so really and truly, I mean, I'm looking at this, and I think it looks pretty good the way it is. You know, 11 years, 160 hours. In my lifetime, I think that it's about in line with what we offered. I think it's
Rick, I know your staff report points it out, but why don't you explain the one change that is, you know, specific.
You made a statement when you started that nothing changed. That's not true.
No, I did say that.
He said one exception.
There is one exception on the employee benefits that I did make one recommendation. Currently, you are not, currently our sick leave accrual maxes out at 120 hours. You cannot carry over more than you cannot carry on the books more than 120 hours of sick leave. You lose it, you use it, or you lose it. It's that type of a system. What I am recommending that the board consider is to change that from 120 to 160 for the following reason. At 30 days, the 30-day waiting period, long-term disability kicks in. And you want to have employees that are good employees that if they become ill, they become sick, if they get in a serious automobile accident, if they have a child that's seriously ill, you want them to be able to get through those issues and get through those problems that they're having in their lives and be able to come back without they're already going through a financial burden. But then their long-term disability kicks in if it's the employee in that situation. So it's just something that I think is a good thing to have. I think it's a positive thing for us to be able to let people know that if you're sick or injured or something happens to you off the job, on the job you're covered under workers' comp, that we have, you know, we will help you bridge that gap until your long-term disability kicks in. And that was my only change, so of 120 to 140 hours.
160.
Or 160, I'm sorry, thank you.
So from 15 days to 20 days.
Right.
And
but again, that's a maximum accrual. If they accrue beyond that, it drops off, and that's all that would show in their accrual rates.
And what happens to that 100, 60 days, that liability, if they separate from the district?
The employer, the policy, the employee manual policy as it currently states, and as I'm not recommending any changes to, is that you do not, upon separation, you do not receive any accrued sick leave.
What about vacation?
You get to take your vacation, which
have a reflection on how I feel about the increase in hours.
And they notify you after 3 days of being sick.
Generally speaking, if I suspect something, for example, I have an employee out right now. I know I didn't need a doctor's note for that situation. I know what's taking place. I had another employee who was out, injured themselves over the weekend a couple weeks ago, and I did get a doctor's note.
I mean, if they're gone for 3 days, don't they have a doctor's diagnosis, right?
What's your home? Flu or home?
I don't know. Is that
there's language in here? There's language in here as to that effect, and I just don't remember what the number is.
It would be at the manager's or my discretion, and I've exercised it before, and I haven't felt the need.
Rick, explain to me again your logic behind this.
Behind what?
Behind the increased sick days.
At 100.
I listened. I read it, but I want to hear it again.
30-day waiting period for long-term disabilities when that kicks in, for when long-term disability plans kick in. State disability plans can get.
But it's retroactive.
There's a waiting period. There's a waiting period. There's a short-term disability plan.
Calendar days.
Short-term disability, there's no waiting period for it. Short-term. That bridges the 30 days. And then there's long-term, and there's a 30-day waiting period for that.
But in the average, if somebody gets hurt at work, how do you know it's going to be long-term or short-term?
If somebody gets hurt at work, they're on workers' comp.
If somebody falls, Farron fell down or hurt herself, whatever it was, a couple weeks ago. She would apply for short-term disability.
She would use sick leave for that. She would utilize her sick leave.
But if it went past that?
If it went past that, she could apply for, if she was out for an extended period of time, she could apply for disability.
Which is your basis for wanting to change the?
Protect them for that extra week.
So they have a bridge for that extra week. I think it's
basically an extra week, 5 days.
But the question I had is if they're looking at short-term disability, it's retro. Isn't short-term disability retro?
But we don't have any short-term disability. We don't have that.
But can't people get that?
We don't have it. It's not a benefit that we have.
It's your sick days that you're using for your short term.
If they want to pay for private insurance, that's up to them. That has nothing to do with us.
Correct.
That's what you're saying. AFLAC or some other long term you go out and pay for on your own. But that's payment out of their own money for their own benefit to provide for the family. It has nothing to do with our policy. Let me ask you this. As I look through, and I appreciate the fact that this information was here because I didn't think I saw this before, but. So let me just, for example, go to Central Sanitation. 12 days of sick leave annually, what is unlimited referred to?
It means they can accrue forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Someone can leave with 500 hours of sick leave and they probably get cashed out for it.
Wow. What it doesn't tell us is whether or not they have a cash out policy, but it does say how much accrues is what we're talking about.
Yeah, like the one above it, Byron Bethany, the total age of divided.
Yeah, they cash them out.
Everybody's giving cash compensation.
So City of Brentwood does not have unlimited. There's accrues. That's the total accrual is 96 a month.
It's 8 hours monthly, it's 12 days a year.
There's max, and then there's an unlimited annual. Annual. So there's 12 days, and you're asking to accrue.
This is not to earn.
It doesn't change the earning process.
To keep on the books in the bank. And I got to tell you, the chances of this, it's not going to happen regularly. This is every now and then you have an employee that needs that bridge and this gets them.
But they have to have accrued that. So they're gonna have to be here for a minimum of 3 years, well, 2.5 years, and never take a sick day in order to get to.
It's gonna take a while to accrue
20 days.
It's gonna take time to get there.
The average employee may be here 10 years before they finally get to that point where they've got 160 hours.
It's like I noted in the report, if employees manage their sick leave appropriately and really only use it when they are sick or for doctor's appointments or when their children are sick and that sort of thing, then they should be able to attain those balances in a relatively brief period of time, 2 to 2.5 years. And that's the only change relative to employee benefits that I recommended. Everything else is the same from what was adopted by the board back in 2003 and 2008.
Mary, did you have another question?
Well, I was just going to say, in my past lives, you could also use vacation to fill in those days. So as long as you had, you could use vacation as well to fill in that bridge.
You could if they have it, yes.
Right.
You can use any combination of things. I know that, for example, when employees are workers of comp, sometimes they'll use their sick leave and their vacation to help them over a period of time.
Okay.
Or the floating holiday.
Is there any other discussion? Any other comments? Any from the public?
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other comments, can we get a motion?
Well, let me try this one. I would move that we adopt staff recommendations in the draft report and bring back at a future date just the discussion, to have a discussion only on comparisons on vacations, but approve everything else. And that would give the board time to think about what we're offering and be able to compare things, maybe have a discussion if we wanted to change anything at that time.
Was that a motion?
Yeah, it was.
Do I have a second?
No. Let me make another. I can't second a contingent motion. I just would make a motion that we accept staff's a proposal as written, and then a future agenda item. Let's discuss vacation and the appropriateness so we can have a board discussion on that. But the motion simply is to accept the board's recommendation.
Can I get a second? I got another motion.
I'm so trying.
I have no motion.
At least for the minutes, you've got that there's two motions.
Yeah.
You got the first one that was contingent in terms of coming back. The second one was motion for approve their recommendation. They both died for lack of a second.
I'm still trying to find the part where the employee notifies the management that I'm going to be sick. I can't find that.
I found it.
Okay.
As soon as we get this passed, I'll have the Highway Patrol come up and give us his report.
So it is on page 7. I can slide you mine if you want to look at it here. It might be easier. It's the last sentence. It says sick pay may be withheld if the employee does not provide a satisfactory verification. So this one has no time limit on it. And I see this in some employee manuals, and we draft these all the time for our public agencies, or Melissa drafts them all the time for our public agencies. Sometimes there's a 2-day, 3-day, 5-day requirement. This one's actually more stringent. The manager can ask for verification and withhold sick pay if the verification isn't provided at their discretion.
Okay. So we need a motion again.
So I'll make the motion that we accept it as written.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? I call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I'm going to go back, if it's okay with the rest of the people, I'm going to go back to area agency presentations for the Highway Patrol. Scott here. And then invite you to come on up. Thanks for coming tonight.
Thank you. Sorry I was late, man.
Were you out writing tickets?
Always happens.
At a customer.
Officer Brewer's on vacation, so they asked me today to come by here, so I grabbed some quick stats. Last month we had 6 DUI arrests out here in Discovery Bay area.
Summertime,
yeah, the boating season and stuff like that. One was a felony arrest due to a hit and run. And then also out here, I've been working out here a lot. Myself, I've written a little bit over 100 tickets out in the Discovery Bay area. A lot of it's on the Newport Drive area, some on the Discovery Bay, and a lot of it is, there are some on Marsh Creek Road out there, you know, kind of between Byron Highway and Bixler. And then out in here, you know, coming down Highway 4 to access into Discovery Bay. That's pretty much the statistics I have.
So that 100 is a 30-day period?
The 100 is a 30-day period, yeah. And that's what I wrote out here. I wasn't able to get a hold of any of the graveyard
plus
guys. They usually a little bit, a lot less. So it's probably safe to say about 130 citations were written out in this area.
Can I ask you, we could go Saturday, the day of the Big Cat Poker Run, which is the 22nd, was it 24th? There was an accident at the Blue Top Condos right on Marina Road.
Oh. Yeah.
And it was a limousine.
Yes.
And
it was a town car.
Town car.
Yeah, I was the investigating officer.
I thought, was she charged with a DWI?
Yes.
I thought, okay, thank you. I thought, so she told everybody she wasn't. I'm kind of curious.
Be nice.
Virgil.
Question, are the DUIs just in town or are they part of Highway 4 included in
the DUIs I took the stats were from inside the Discovery Bay here. And then there was one on Orwood and Vixler out there. Mm-hmm. And another one was Vixler and Balfour. Okay. Right there. So all pretty much in this
Yeah, pretty much clubs.
Was the hit and run in town?
It was over at Pointe Timber and Vixler.
Okay.
Any questions? Anybody?
Anything you want me to tell the team?
Don't keep up the good work.
Just tell him when he makes sure when he comes into town to do his big, you know, heavy, that he gives us advance notice so we know that he's here.
Just remember this profile.
And, yeah, remember all of us. Remember we never profile. Speed, any of us. Except maybe Rick.
And neither do I.
Neither do I.
It's good company.
Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Okay, let's go back to... See, we're done with new business. All right, let's go back now. We can step on to the President's Report and Director's Comments. Marianne, anything from you?
No.
Thank you. Bill?
No.
Chris?
Negative.
Oh. I used to give you a quick update. So the school board had a presentation on the 22nd, and they had 36 students that got perfect scores on the state tests. And overall, the state had a decline in the state scores, but our students are maintaining, they're treading water well, and that was pretty good to see 100% on those tests. So.
Good.
Great.
Kevin?
Nothing.
Oh, fabulous. General Manager?
I have Greg Harris is going to give you an update on the CIP.
I thought you said I had Greg Harris. Okay. Yeah, of course you did.
Gregory Harris.
I touched it.
Gregory Harris, Herbert Engineering. And you have a handout on the screen itself, or so I can zoom in on
that. Let's do it again.
CPI.
Okay, this is a copy of a document I gave you back in April. Okay. And at the time, it was requested that when we give updates, we provide the previous information in a format that you guys can follow, so people know, you know, what's going on. And as you recall, we floated bonds for the CIP. There's been a variety of projects built in different phases of the CIP. And as a method of tracking things, we like to make sure that we are on budget. And this is what this presentation is about. So if you recall this document, and I've zoomed in for people in the audience, but we have a chart down below, and then we have the numbers up above. But the top line lists sort of the projects that are ongoing or planned for the CIP. The fiber optic project is not started yet. The UV improvements were completed, okay? And the you see the current value there is the actual cost. It's actual dollars spent. Okay, so in some cases, we've bid and bought equipment, like you guys bought a piece of UV equipment. Sometimes we go out to bid, have a contract to construct it. Sometimes we install it with our own personnel and install it that way. And we track those costs. So sometimes there's design involved. So on the left-hand side, you see category. You see the CIP budget. You see the design would mean Herwood Engineering designed something. You paid me to design something. Okay, construction services is you paid me or the geotech or somebody else to go out and watch it get built. Previous construction is if sometimes it's broken out in phases. You guys have bought equipment, so there's an equipment purchase line. There's construction installation, either locally we did it with our own people or we hired a contractor. And then in some cases, there's a remaining construction installation where we're forecasting what we think something's gonna cost, or we're under contract for it, okay? And then sometimes we assign some work that's in one subject to another. The key item here is the current values is what we track, and those are in yellow highlight for you. And what you see is for the UV improvements, we spent $95,000 to install the UV. But if you look up to the left, the original budget, CIP budget, was $250,000. So in essence, it cost us less than what we had budgeted when you went out for bonds to do that project, okay? Or the, excuse me, to do the CIP. Some of these projects are in the CIP, all of them are in the CIP, not all of them were in the bond funds, but they all are in the CIP.
How would we know that the UV improvements project is completed?
Well, that one is done and completed. It was went online a year ago. I'll tell you verbally which ones are done now and their status, and then maybe next time I'll put complete above them, if
can
you like.
Can you explain what happened and why that one came under budget and the and what took place for that to happen that way?
Sure. Okay. When the you purchased the equipment yourself, was the equipment purchase that was $140,000. Originally, we were going to go out to public bid, hire a contractor to come in and install it, and sort of do it long form, if you would. Instead, Veolia offered to install it, and then all we did was hire our on-contract electrician to connect it, and Veolia used their labor to install it, and as a result, our costs essentially attribute to a minor cost for me to come up with some drawings, and then a minor cost of materials, $10,000 of materials to install it, and labor for the electrician, and then $140,000 in equipment. So essentially we did it ourselves and saved over $100,000.
Did we pay anything over and above their contract to Veolia for doing this?
No.
Perfect.
All right, so there's an example where we were able to do something in-house for less than if we went long form and got a contractor to do it, okay? And we are, because of our success on that, we're doing that in some other projects around that will that maybe are on CIP, we can talk about that. Solids handling facilities is the last piece that you guys just approved tonight. Everything else has been spent. And the last item on that, you see the 218,259, that is listed there now, and that's the contract amount that you just awarded, or that will be the contract amount that you just awarded. The good news on that is when you add it all up, said and done, I was indicating to you that we were going to be over by on 4/17 of 2013 in red, right underneath you, I was projecting a deficit of $74,000. So we were projecting ahead and thinking, I don't know what the bid is yet, but we might be short about $75,000 when we bid this thing. The actual bids came in lower than we thought. As I said, the engineer's estimate was $550,000. And as a result of that, our real cost, the current value is $257,000, and there's a difference now of $331,000. So there was a difference in $331,000 between the engineer's estimate of $550,000 and what we just got. As a result of that, instead of a negative of $74,481, we're showing a positive of $257,000. Okay, so that one bid alone, I was trying to track the positives, the deltas for you here. So that's a positive 257 there for you, okay? So that bid alone, we saved and got back that much money. Now what's important about this is in April, I was projecting, because of the bids on Pump Station W, that we were behind, that we were tracking, that we were overspending the amount of funds that we had budgeted in the CIP. And one of those items that was causing that, the solids handling facilities, I was tracking negative by $74,000. They're now positive by $257,000. And the difference between those two numbers is $331,000. So the difference is we're like $331,000 in the black now versus being negative on that one budget item. So that's what we're trying to compare to you. And maybe I made it more confusing than not. So I'm gonna go through this again, a little more straightforward, so I see it here pull now. Let's look at the whole budget in general first, and then we'll come back to the individual items. Okay, so on the whole budget, go over to the right where it says, underneath, it says summary of differentials, okay? Over here on the right, and then with the screen here for everybody. In April 17th, 2013, I basically said we're behind by $273,000. Okay. However, now that we received bids, actual bids on the redesign for Pump Station W and the solid tailing facilities, we are no longer behind by $270,000. We're ahead by $125,000. The difference between those two numbers is now is $398,000. Okay, so where did that $398,000 come from? It came from essentially all of these projects coming across the line, some of them positive, some of them negative. The UV improvements were positive by $95,000, as seen in yellow. The solid tailing facilities are positive by $257,000, as seen in yellow. The rebid on Pump Station W is negative by $474,000, but that's less than the $738,000 it was originally bid at. Remember, we bid it, and then we said that's too high. We recommended you, we don't go out to board. We redesigned it at our cost to reduce cost. And as a result, the final bid came in at $474,000. Okay. And then the secondary improvements, we managed to save $248,000 by changing how we're going to do construction management and manage it how we did the other projects. As a result, over the whole budget cycle, you see that we've gone from a negative of $273,000 to a positive of $125,000. And that is basically a net swing in the last 8 months, or the last 4 months, of $400,000. So we've managed in 4 months to recoup $400,000 of the project costs. And the two things that really drove it is we redesigned Pump Station W, and we saved from $738,000 to $474,000, so almost $400,000, $325,000 there. And we saved, And then we the bids on the solids handling came in $331,000 less. So together, those pile up, and we mix them in with the loss that we're taking on Pump Station W, and essentially we've wrapped it back, and we're at $125,000 now in the red, or in the positive.
In the black.
Okay? So, projects that are done, UV improvements are done, the fiber optics is being done by the Hoffman Company. We worked out a deal with them to where we just buy the materials and they're digging the trench and they're putting the conduits in. And remember, we talked about a joint service with those guys where they're gonna dig the trench, we bought the conduit, they're gonna dig the trench, and we're gonna let them use on our backbone, but they're doing half the labor for us to get it installed. So we're tracking those costs right now, but we appear to be, you know, in that range still on the $50,000 budget.
Is that what's going on in the streets out here, like right as an example right now in front of the school?
That's PG&E. This is going on behind the golf course in the dirt.
Oh.
Along behind the golf course there. So unless you're golf course, you know where the maintenance yard is. Sneaking along behind the fence there. So fiber optics is under, UV is done. Solids handling, the last contract you just awarded, so there'd be no more costs associated with that. Pump Station W, that contract has been awarded and it's under construction. So those costs are pretty firm. Secondary improvements are in design, but we're confident we can reduce the construction management while it's shown. And then we haven't started work yet on the skate improvements, the collection system, lift station F. And by the way, the last item there is a contingency budget of $300,000 in the bond funds that at the moment we're not projecting usage of. Essentially, we're projecting an overage of $125,000. So 4 months ago, we came here with the goal of value engineering this stuff as we're going forward so that we don't have to touch the contingency budget as we're moving through these projects and making sure that you guys have enough funds to complete all the projects. So this is the update on that. And the good news is, you know, we've done a pretty good job of getting back on track.
Any questions? Questions on there? Questions from the
Just for my benefit, Gregory, still kind of the unknown is what we're going to, is how much, what's going to happen with lift station F. Lift station F, right?
Is that in the last wastewater committee, we were directed to come up with options for lift station F.
Right.
At the moment, a plug number of $500,000 was put into the bond fund.
Understood.
With an unknown plan. It's like, we got to do something. Don't know what.
Right.
We're going to put $500,000 in the bond fund and figure it out. Okay? So the direction of the last wastewater committee meeting is come up with the options and ranges of costs to accomplish that and bring that back to you guys. And so we started that task.
Just one person.
Okay. And then just as a reminder, so maybe the board doesn't know, lift station F is the oldest lift station in Discovery Bay. It's over 40 years old. It's the closest one to this office. It's right here on Willow River Lake, in Willow Lake. And it's the one in the front yard that's underground. And the structure is 40 years old, never been repaired. And the pumps are the original pumps.
And it has continual flow.
And all the sewage flow for all of Old Discovery Bay goes through, just so you know.
Yeah, that's where we see the trucks parked.
They're always there.
Any questions from the public? Nothing else. You need nothing for us.
No, this is just an update for you. I will maybe put a completed or not completed above the projects next time, but it's just 4 minutes.
So thank you very much. I would say for you, kudos. Thank you for working diligently to keep us close to budget in an ever-changing world.
All right. Thank you.
Got a few more.
Paul McCartney. Sorry. District Legal.
As always, pleasure to be here.
Does that conclude your report?
That does.
Committee updates? We have no committee updates.
Item three needs to be addressed.
Community Center Advisory Committee appointment of at-large committee member.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. As chair of the committee, I would just state that, as you recall, last meeting, Marianne resigned from the Community Center Committee in order to comply with the composite of the committee as directed by the board. And tonight I would like to make a recommendation to the board that Ms. Chris Farrow be assigned to the Community Center Committee. She has extensive experience with YMCA. She currently works as the director in Dublin at the YMCA there, but she is a resident here in Discovery Bay and came to a few meetings and expressed interest and has agreed to fill that position. So I would make that recommendation to the board this evening.
Any discussion?
No, I'll second that.
Qualified.
So therefore, I will make the motion to the board.
Yes,
okay.
Any public comment?
I would ask that the board make a motion to appoint Chris Farrow to the vacant seat on the Community Center Committee.
Okay. Now, this could just be an appointment for the board, can't it?
Yes, it's a standing committee, so you can make the appointment.
Okay.
So done?
We'll still make that appointment.
Okay.
You've got a motion, so you need a second.
We do need it. That's how I was asking whether they need a motion. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll second that. Okay.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Let's move on to M, correspondence. Other than East County Fire Protection District, we talked about that. LAFCO meeting minutes today, we don't need that. Public records request, none. Future agenda items. Marianne, anything?
I thought we had shared the last one about having on the agenda about forming a foundation and a volunteer coordinator, but I did not see it on the agenda.
If I may, Director Wiesen, generally what happens is when the board requests for future agenda items, we have a forecast that we maintain that Carol updates regularly. It's on the forecast. It's a lot, because of the frequency of the meetings, we can't always get everything at the very next meeting. But it is on our hit list, it's on the list. And if you ever wonder what's on the list, just ask Carol and she'll show you a copy of what's coming up in future agendas.
Just out of curiosity, going back for a moment, why are we here in September? Are the July 8th meeting minutes listed as correspondent to? Just out of curiosity, that's like a couple months ago. Okay, just curious. And that packet goes out to everybody anyway, so I was kind of curious.
Maybe they sent a letter in this time.
No, they were my minutes. They got my marks on them, but just curious when I attended. That's all. Just wondered.
Bill, any future agenda?
Wonder something significant about that particular meeting.
Chris, anything?
No, thanks.
Kevin?
I'm good.
Okay, we will move on to the next item, which is
adjournment.
Thank you for coming.